This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome to New Books in Science Fiction. I'm Dan Hanks, your guest host for this particular podcast, and today I'm delighted to be talking to a wonderful author whose debut book is so fast-paced and thrilling and full of virtual reality mind-bending moments. I'm going to title this the Whoa episode. The novel in question is called Deep Dive. It was written by Ron Walters and published by Angry Robot this January 2022. And it's a little bit Matrix, a little bit Inception, and with my current favourite trope of sad dad at the centre of it all. I absolutely love this book, and I know you will too, so let's find out a little bit more about how it came to be. Ron, thank you so much for joining me. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
So we're here to talk about Deep Dive, your novel, which is just released this week, which is, I'm sure, been very exciting for you.
It has. It's surreal, but yeah.
Now, first of all, for our listeners out there, can you give us the perfectly perfected author's pitch for the book?
I knew I should have practiced this. In a nutshell, Deep Dive is about a video game developer named Peter Benek, who's struggling to get a new project off the ground after his most recent project was released to fairly dismal reviews. And to that end, he partners with a friend and tech genius who's developed a new virtual reality headset. And the day that Peter goes to test the headset, something goes wrong, knocks him out, and when he comes to, he finds that his life is completely altered. His daughters no longer exist, and he's not the failure that he thought he was, but he's actually hugely successful. And so he spends the story trying to figure out what's real, what's not, you know, searching for his daughters, even though everyone else, including his wife, say they never existed.
I mean, when I was first given that blurb for the book, and I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be something that as a father connects with me. And I think it's going to do really well from that, just that angle as well. And we're going to get into that a bit more in a little bit. But can you tell us what was the spark that gave you the idea for this fantastic story?
Honestly, it would probably have to be frustration at not having been published. Because Deep Dive is actually the ninth book that I've ever written. Wow. So I've been writing for, I want to say, writing books for 12 years, give or take.
Yeah.
And so I'd hit a point where I'd come close to a book deal, come close to some, you know, milestones, but not that one, not, you know, book deal, book on the shelf, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I was real frustrated, and it was pretty much kind of going to be my last ditch effort. Like, I was going to give this book a chance. And so it just wound up that I channeled all of that frustration into the character. At the same time, I had also just kind of recently gotten back into video games, slightly obsessively so. and I obviously didn't want to be too autobiographical. So I was like, hey, video game developer, that would be a cool main character to write about, which then naturally led into the prospect of using virtual reality. And then once I had that, a couple other things fell into place and I landed on the whole notion that, you know, he's struggling to balance his work and family life. And then, well, what happens if that's all like ripped out from under him? His daughters are just wiped out of existence. And then he's also given the very thing that he's been struggling to get this whole time, you know, success.
Yeah. So you just going back a step, I mean, you talk about this being slightly, or you wanted to avoid being autobiographical. So is there a lot of your parental struggles in this? Because obviously, you know, like you say, Peter's a loving family man, but he is struggling between balancing that work and life.
There's definitely me in him, you know, my frustration and that desperation to hope that you're not wasting your time, that you haven't put all this effort into something for so many years, only to have it just kind of, you know, turn into nothing. I mean, in terms of the parenting, absolutely. Like, I definitely, you know, put my parenting self into him. The two girls in the story they're modeled after my kids. And it's funny because I was actually just writing up an answer to a question like this. And I realized that as much as the girls are modeled on mine in terms of like behaviors and stuff, the things that they say and they do in the book are also pretty much things that most kids say and do.
Yeah.
So it's autobiographical to a certain extent, but it's also fairly universal. Like any parent I know will immediately go, oh yeah, my kids have done that. They've scratched on that wall. They've, you know, written messages in crayon where they shouldn't have, or, you know, left their toys on the floor and I have a hole in my foot now because of it, you know.
Have you ever talked to anybody about some of the elements that you've worked into here and then been surprised to discover that this is a universal experience? Because I think, I mean, especially lately in the past couple of years, you know, parents might have felt a little bit more siloed, a bit more alone in their experiences. And it's only when you start talking to other people, you realize actually we're all going through the same thing.
I think so. I mean, I would say not so much in my like personal and real life. We're in a weird situation where in terms of our work group and our friend group, there aren't many other parents who have children like our age. There's a few that have younger kids or their kids are all grown and out of the house.
Yeah.
But no, in talking to people online, I see that frustration and that struggle to like, how do you, you know, handle parenting, especially right now? With the way things are going, whether it's how do you deal with school, how do you deal with socializing, how do you deal with all of that stuff. So I wouldn't say that I necessarily had conversations about that specifically because of the book.
Yeah.
But that, well, and I guess technically I wrote the first draft of the book was written, like I finished the first draft like March 1st, 2020. So like 15 days later, and then we already had inklings that like things were about to turn, you know, but, and so maybe subconsciously some of that was feeding into it as well.
Yeah. Would you say that, I mean, the idea of a father or a parent, trying to balance their pursuit of success with their home life and trying to be a good parent, do you think that's kind of a topic of our time?
I think so. Yeah. This is probably the part where I start to ramble and lose my train of thought because like there's a whole bunch to unpack with that. I think because I think maybe we're of the generation where in terms of doing what we want to do is important to us. And so we do our best to fit that in. And when we find that it's not working, we do our best to make it work. Whereas maybe generations back, it was you kind of accepted your lot in life. And even if you had this dream, maybe, well, life seemed to be getting in the way and that was just life.
Yeah.
You know, so I like to think that we're more willing to push through that and not accept what we don't want.
Yeah.
I also think, I don't know if every parent is like this, but for me, I love my children. I want my children to grow up, you know, loved and taken care of. And I want to be the best father I can be. But I'm still a person outside of being a father. Like being a father is not, it is who I am, but it's not who I am, right? And I think maybe that's an attitude that's changed or changing a bit, whereas, and maybe not for everyone, but I know I do see people who talk about like their identity is being a parent. And I'm like, that's great. But what happens in my mind is that you start to lose a bit of yourself. And that can add frustration that doesn't need to be there. The balance of that is, that's the hard part though.
Yeah. I certainly, there was a lot of that connected with me being someone who tried to retain that individuality, but lost it completely by being sucked into being a parent, being part of the family. And it's only sort of recently I've been trying to get back to,
yeah,
to that.
I don't know. And I'll be the first to say that I'm in a pretty lucky position, because I was a stay-at-home dad. My wife's job is basically let me stay home once we decided we were going to have kids. So up until they're, my oldest is 12 and the youngest is 9. And so up until they both started school, I was home, yeah, you know, with them all day long, taking care of them. So in a lot of ways, I wasn't really dealing with being a working dad and missing a lot of things with them.
Yeah.
For me, it was more trying to find those nooks and crannies where I could fit in writing, whether it was like nap time, or, you know, when my wife came home, I would either, you know, run off, go to the gym or something, or just disappear and try to write for an hour or two. But I was definitely lucky that I didn't have that huge professional burden. So I was able to kind of start going after writing, I guess.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. You know, yeah. Whereas maybe if I had already had a profession, like I worked as a journalist in the States before we moved overseas. But then I was having problems finding a job here. And then we just decided, you know, well, we'll just do this. We'll have kids and you can stay home. My wife, you know, teach and everything.
Yeah. Obviously, I mean, we've been talking a lot about the parenting angle of this book. This is a very science fiction-y book. It's a wonderful thriller, but the emotional core is that sort of fatherly angst, which is just, God, it's so heartbreaking for so much of it. But it really drags you through. I absolutely loved it. Did you draw on any of your own parenting challenges in some aspects of this, or any parenting fears?
Oh, absolutely. I get freaked out when my kids are too quiet, you know, or if they're supposed to be one place and they're not there, especially if they've run down to the park, or even if they're, you know, I expect that they're going to be upstairs playing and I go and they're nowhere to be seen. So that definitely sparked the whole, well, why not just torture this poor man character and make his children completely disappear, you know? Plus, then you're taking away the thing that he feels neglectful of, you know?
Yeah.
And so you're just adding to his angst. But yeah, no, for sure. It's that trying to, like I said earlier, like hold on to that sense of self and doing what I want to do for myself that's going to make me feel like I'm still a whole person, not just a parent who's had to give up things. And as a parent, you give up things. That's just the nature of being a parent. And that's fine. You know, I'm on board with that. But even though I made a point of wanting to write because it was what I wanted to do, there was still a lot of it, especially when everyone's home, you know, on the weekends or the afternoons. If, you know, I've been home or if they've been gone all day or whatever, and I still sit down once everyone's home, there's still that voice in the back of my head saying, well, why are you taking this time for yourself? Why aren't you stopping for the day and going to hang out with everyone else?
Yeah.
You know, even if I've had a productive day, I think that's the part where that kind of manic drive to succeed, even once you feel like you've succeeded, there's always something, some goal you're trying to hit, some milestone you're looking for. And so that's definitely a constant struggle. Making myself check out of what I was doing to kind of immerse myself back into my family. And they're amazing about it. You know, they've never once complained if I disappear and sit in a chair for 5 hours staring at the screen.
That's good. So it sounds like this was kind of a cathartic experience almost, and in a way.
Yeah, I think so. I wish I could say it was so cathartic that I feel freed of that angst and guilt. I don't.
Are we ever free?
No. I think that, yeah. It was cathartic. It was good because I will be honest, it helped that the book got published.
Yeah.
And so that, I won't say that I've calmed down in terms of feeling that manic drive to get things done and to succeed, but I at least think more about calming down.
And do you feel particularly pleased that, I mean, if you've written, is this the 9th book? So you've written 8 previously.
Yes.
So are you particularly pleased that this is the one that's your debut? Is this the one that means the most to you?
It does. I think so. And I think because I put so much of myself into it and because it was that book that was, it was basically like, I'm not going to let publishing break me. Like, I feel worn down. I feel close to the breaking point, but I don't want to give up.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what fed into that. And so, yeah, the fact that this is it is fantastic. The funny thing is that after I got the email that, you know, Angry Robot wanted to publish the book, at the same time, I had had a middle grade book that I had written previously that I had also sent to a couple of smaller publishers. And about 2 months after Angry Robot picked up Deep Dive, I got an email from one of the smaller publishers saying they wanted to publish that middle grade book. So after 12 years of nothing, well, 10 years at that point, in the space of 2 months, I had 2 book deals, which was just like, the other one isn't out until the end of this year, but I'm still, it's like, I don't even know how that happens.
Fantastic.
You know, but no, I think I'm happy that this is the one. I look back at all of my other books and there are some that I think are still good and still good enough to be published. It just wasn't the right time, you know?
Will you go back and revisit those at some point?
I think there's a couple that I might. The funny thing is they're all middle grade. This is actually, it's not technically my first adult book. The first book I ever wrote was like an adult urban fantasy. But this is my first real like adult book that I'm proud of. And it's my first thriller. I was actually surprised that that's what I wound up writing when I wrote it.
Yeah. And is that the kind of book you normally read or do you read quite broadly?
I read really broadly. I mean, right now I'm reading a Norse-inspired fantasy. I read middle grade books all over the place. I read thrillers. It's all fantasy and science fiction. I can't ever bring myself to just read straight contemporary.
I mean, do you think that you'll continue to write more in this genre or?
Yes. I have an idea that I think fits in line with this one. I also have something else I've been working on that does fit in line this one, but is not quite as thrillery. It's got aspects of the whole virtual reality stuff, but it has a lot of epic fantasy elements to it as well. So it's definitely not a thriller in the sense that Deep Dive was meant to be a thriller.
Yep.
But I do think it still fits, you know, in that vein a little bit. Honestly, have you ever read China Medieval?
I have. Is it Perdido Street Station?
That was his second book. That's like the one that really kicked off his career.
Yeah.
I love his books. I adore them. And one of the things I love is that they're all different. He set out to basically write a book in every genre imaginable. So all of his books are different kinds of books, but they are very distinctly China Medieval books. And I think maybe that's what I hope to do. You know, I know brand is important and you want your readers do expect a certain thing. But I also, for me personally, even when it comes to reading, I can read one book, but then I don't necessarily want to read that same kind of book as my next book. I like to branch out and, you know, just different flavors here and there.
So you'd be quite happy to sort of hold on to your voice, but try new ways of telling stories. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, then I can't wait to read more from you. But you said that you're going to have some more virtual reality or at least another element of that in a future work perhaps.
Yeah, I think so. I'm always weird about talking about books that aren't done, you know. But yeah, it'll be a jumping off point, let's say. It'll be in some ways though the opposite, like an inversion of Deep Dive, if that makes sense, without getting into details obviously.
So the virtual reality features quite significantly in deep dive.
Yeah.
Is that something you spent a lot of time doing research about, or did you know about it already, or have you sort of played fast and loose with it?
I think a little bit of both.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, I'm aware of virtual reality, you know, whether it's games or what's in movies and that sort of thing. But I remember when I kind of landed on the, so that this is also the problem with talking about this, is that the so-called twist at the end of my book kind of requires not mentioning too much. But what I wanted the book to, what I wanted to happen at the end of the book, virtual reality allowed me to do that. I mean, it's completely implausible, I'm assuming, scientifically, who knows. But virtual reality was a really good gateway to get there. And so when I decided I was going to use VR, I started reading up on it a little bit, you know, random articles here and there. And then when I landed on the kind of technology that would allow you to be so immersed that you couldn't distinguish the virtual world from the real world, I was like, that's kind of where I wanted to go. Not to the level that, say, like Ready Player One took it, where you have this giant metaverse where everyone lives and works in. I wasn't going to do that, but I definitely think that the technology I have set up in the book is the kind of thing that would eventually lead to that sort of, you know, scenario.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I researched some, but some of my writing friends like to make fun of me because I don't like to research that much. Partly I just, my mind doesn't do that. I don't spend hours and hours poring over, you know, material. And partly because once I get an idea, I also don't want to be too influenced by the stuff that I've read. I don't want to, you know, kind of, I guess, cheat my way into it. I want it just to be all from my head.
Yeah. And does that sort of play into your writing process? So are you more of a, you can meander, you don't need to necessarily plot it in great detail. You kind of, find your way.
I used to not plot at all. I would just start and write until I got to the end, and the revisions were hell. but at the same time, I actually much prefer revising over drafting a book. Once I have the bookend of the beginning and the end, I will tear that thing apart. I will do whatever needs to be done with it. But it's just that initial writing that's always the toughest part. But I, in the last few years, I've become something of a plotter, where I might have like a page that I write down the stuff that I think I want to happen. And I do like to have an end in mind. If I don't feel like I have an end goal, then I do feel like I'm meandering too much. I feel a little lost. But even if I write down like a synopsis or an outline, a lot of times what I wind up writing is not what was on that thing. And a lot of that, I think, is because it, you know, it's the whole hooky thing of, oh, my characters speak to me. But once you start writing them, for me, as much as I might have a plot in mind, the plot has to unfold from what the characters are doing. And so if I happen to write a scene and they do something I wasn't really expecting, well, then that causes the plot to deviate. And then there goes my outline. But in general, though, the ending tends to stick. I knew setting out with Deep Dive, I knew exactly where I wanted it to go. And so that's helpful.
And did you know when you set out to write it, how you were going to get there? I mean, you've talked about, I mean, it's quite, we won't go into specifics, but it went in directions I did not expect and anticipate. And was that something you had planned, or were you not expecting it either?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think back through it, because as much as I've read this book countless times, like trying to recall everything in it is still hard. I think some of the main beats in the story, like the main events that happen, I knew I wanted in there. I mean, without, you know, spoilers and stuff, I think like the cabin scene, that was always going to be in there. That was going to be like a turning point. Maybe the midpoint, I guess. The family dynamics were always going to be there at the beginning. And I knew I wanted some sort of, you know, clandestine, sketchy government agency involved in some capacity.
You have to have that, of course.
I mean, you have to. It's tropey. It's been there, done that. But I love it. I am a sucker for it. And I think a lot of people are, you know? And so, no, I think, you know, once I wrote it, I did give thought to some of that stuff. But then once I had the draft, and especially once the book was bought and I was going through the revision process, I was more conscious of what I had done and more conscious of how I wanted to play with that as I revised the book. You know, I tried to put in some references and some, events that might make people question some of the things that were happening. I just heard a dog. It means there's someone outside. Yeah, but I definitely wanted it to hit. I wanted to have some of those traditional thriller, you know, things, yeah, for lack of a better word,
yeah,
happen. I'm curious, like, I guess the problem is getting into spoilers, but like, I don't know what readers will see on it as unexpected, just because I know the book, even though I can't recall everything about it, I still know the book really well. So for me, it's not unexpected.
Yeah.
So the idea of looking at it with completely fresh eyes, like I am curious, like what people's takeaway.
Well, I mean, I love the setup. I think the setup is magnificent, and you know, you play with that so well, and you hit all the beats you need to, and then the way you resolve it in the second half of the book is just, you know, I wasn't expecting it to go in those particular places, and it was fabulous, because it's such a page turner as well. I mean, it is a thrilling page turning book, but with a lot of heart in it, which was surprising, because you know, in a lot of these page turners, you don't always get that characterization and that sort of emotional draw.
I mean, I will say for that, for sure, is something I wanted to do, because I personally don't like reading books that don't have that emotional depth to them, which is funny, because a lot of times with first drafts, the notes that I get are, you need to add more emotion to this. But even if, whether it's a book or a video game, like if I don't have that connection with the characters and really feel that aspect of it, I kind of check out.
Yeah.
So I definitely, as much as I wanted it to have that thriller vibe, I also wanted it. I knew that it needed to have that emotional core, because that's the thing that, you know, plots are a dime a dozen. Like, I mean, as much as I like what I did with mine, I won't say that it's the most wholly original thing in the world at all. But I think that that's fine, because as long as you've established a connection between the readers and the characters, which is what I wanted to do, then you're gold. Then you can almost write any plot.
This emotional core at the center of it is to do with parenting. And one of the things that I don't know if you've seen talked about online in the last couple of years, at least, is a sort of push for more parenting in science fiction and fantasy. And I think we know there are parents as characters, but we don't often see parenting in there, and sort of those challenges and those worries and those fears. Do you think we need more of that in science fiction and fantasy? And do you see any reason why maybe we haven't traditionally had that in the past?
Oh, I absolutely think we need it. I'm thinking about my age group. We're not all parents, obviously, but you know, a lot of people my age, a lot of people I know who read science fiction and fantasy are parents. And it goes back to the whole idea of wanting to kind of see yourself reflected in fiction. And so, yeah, absolutely. You know, seeing parents on page is hugely important and nice when it happens. I'm sitting here trying to rack my brain, like, what books have I read? Yours deals with parenting. Swashbucklers deals with parenting.
Yeah.
And I'm having trouble thinking of books that really incorporate parenting into not just the character arc, but the plot.
Yeah.
you know?
I can't think of many, to be honest, although I'm not widely read these days just because I'm so busy.
That's the other, right.
So I'm sure they're out there, but it has been nice to see it in, so my son and I are watching Hawkeye at the moment, and there's definitely some brilliant nods to having to parent and be a superhero at the same mm-hmm. time.
Hey, I'm not going to lie, going into Hawkeye, not the biggest fan of Hawkeye. Having finished the show, I love him. I absolutely love him. It was it's probably my favorite show they've done.
Yeah.
It's just stupendous.
Yeah, same. I mean, WandaVision did obviously deal with the idea of family, and there was a lot of parenting issues in that.
Yeah.
But I think we're only halfway through Hawkeye at the moment, but it's just been, mm-hmm. it's been fabulous to see this character who, I guess, wasn't traditionally the favorite of many people.
Right. Yeah.
And seeing him do very down to earth parenting things is quite fascinating. So, I mean, you and I have a panel soon talking about such things. So I guess we need to read up a lot on some stuff.
To go back to what you were saying, your question though, like, I don't know why, just taking the two of us, like, if we can't think of many, I don't know why there aren't that many books that really use parenting.
The Second Bell, Gabriella Houston, that's talking about a mother, and that's a fabulous book as well. It's sort of a very intimate fairy tale. Composite Creatures, mm-hmm. Caroline Hardacre as well, has some parenting elements to it as well, which has been good. So maybe it's Angry Robot are championing parenting in science fiction and fantasy.
Well, I will say it's not a book, but one of my favorite video games is God of War. And the 2018 one. I don't know if you've ever played any of them.
I played prior to that, but
okay.
Yes.
So the whole thing with this one is it's not like it's an older Kratos. He's, you know, put his past behind him, you know, sort of, and he has a son. And so the game is the plot is that they're going to go. Kratos's wife has died, and they're going to spread her ashes from the tallest peak. Kratos is now a dad without a wife, and he clearly hasn't really been a dad this whole time. So now, you know, he's fighting monsters and trying to be a parent. And that alone, I was just floored when I started playing the game, because, you know, I mean, it's a fun game to play. Absolutely fun. But once the narrative really got going and I realized this was actually a story about a father trying to be a good father and figure out how to be a parent, I was hooked. Like, that will forever be one of my favorite games simply because of the narrative. And it's amazingly fun to play. It's so gruesome. It's just so much fun.
They are great games, but I sort of stopped when my kids were, you know, about, I can't remember, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah.
And then it just became too challenging, mainly because they were on my PlayStation and I therefore couldn't be. And now they're pestering me to get a PlayStation 5. And I'm like, do you know what? They don't exist in this country.
They don't exist here either, right? I mean, I've been trying. Yeah, it's so crazy. Well, mine like to play some games on their iPads. My youngest has started getting interested in games on the consoles, so now I'm starting to, you know, I'm like, well, do we have to share this? This was mine. What are you doing here?
Do you play games together?
We haven't yet. Actually, I was trying to get my wife to play a game called It Takes Two.
Okay.
I don't play co-ops or multiplayer. I play single player games. You know, I don't play online. It's just me. It's just something I want to do, you know, for myself. But now that you say that, I probably should look into some games that I could actually play side by side.
We enjoyed the Lego games.
Yeah.
So the boys love the Marvel, the Marvel games. And I think, the Batman universe as well was a lot of fun to play in.
Yeah, see, I'll have to do that. I think it would be fun because, you know, I'm sitting here kind of, it's hard to let her play and figure it out while also giving her suggestions when she needs them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why it's, you know, the Lego games are just fantastic for sort of bringing you in quite slowly and carefully, which is nice. And now I play Fortnite with them and they absolutely kick my ass because I'm old and slow.
Oh, it's so funny because my girls don't want anything to do with Fortnite or Marvel or anything like that. I don't know if it's because it seems to be predominantly boys in their schools who are playing that or talking about that, and they're still young enough where boys, I have no doubt that given enough time that they'll be much. I am not a good gamer. You know, I just finished playing Bloodborne and I attempted to start playing Sekiro and I've gotten some ways through it, but it's just like, it makes me feel bad about myself. It's so hard.
That's the beauty. But, you know, that's the beauty of them.
It's not a bad problem to have.
So, Ron, this has been your debut launch week. You have an event on tomorrow, which will be in the past for listeners. But you're launching online, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, partly COVID has made everything problematic when it comes to in-person events. Partly we don't... It was just the easiest thing to do, honestly.
Yeah.
It was the easiest way to, since I live in Germany, especially anyone really who's likely to want to come is going to be in the States. I mean, some of our friends here, you know, would come for sure. But, you know, my family and some of my long-term friends, they're all stateside. So the easiest thing to do was just to have something online.
Yeah. Of course. But how have you found the launch experience so far, the build up, you know, the promo, everything to do with that, stuff like this?
You know what? I like this. Because I like talking about writing in my books because I don't have any like writer friends in my actual like, you know, real life circle. So all of my interactions with other writers, it's online. You know, it's usually message boards or, you know, DMing or whatever. So doing this sort of thing and then even writing guest posts for promo, I love it because I get to like talk about what I've been doing for 10 years. You know, people knew I wrote, but I think for them it was just kind of this quirky thing that I did, you know, in the background.
Yeah.
And so now it's nice to say, hey, this is what I've been trying to do. And now for people who aren't writers seeing that book, it's like, oh, okay, well, we get it now. And it's funny though, because people have asked, oh, are you excited? Your book is coming out. Your book is out. And absolutely, I am like floored that I have a book out in the world. But I've lived with this particular book for 2 years. I've had a book deal for a year, give or take, year and a half. And there are all these little milestones that happen between getting the book deal and having the book come out, all of these things. So by the time the book comes out, it's just, you know, you've lived with it for so long that there is a weird anticlimactic feeling to it as well. Yeah. It's like you've just hit the summit and now you're just slowly falling back down. And part of that, I think, is there is a lot of work to do really in the few weeks leading up to it. And so I was doing all kinds of promo and stuff. And now you just kind of you crash down from that. You know, it's a sugar high that suddenly is just gone.
Yeah. And are you going to pull that into the next book?
I should. When I revise it, once I figure out how to make sense of the mess that it is, because it is an unholy mess. It's probably the messiest first draft I've written in a long time.
Really?
I don't know if a lot of that was the pressure of now knowing that, you know, it's the whole sophomore effort.
Yeah.
It's, you don't want your second album to be awful. You don't want your second book to be awful. So there's that pressure that wasn't there before. Also knowing it's a bit of a departure from Deep Dive. And so wondering, is it too much, you know, and what do I need to pull back? What do I need to adjust? I don't know, but no, I mean, I love that I have a book out. It's a relief to have a book out too. Cause now I can say, well, yeah, I am a writer. Before I would never ever tell anyone that I wrote, you know, I mean, people knew I did, but I wouldn't talk about it. Now it's still awkward to talk about because it's still awkward to talk about your book. It's just, I don't know if that'll ever go away.
I think that's the curse, isn't it? Is that the pressure just never lifts, and it never gets less awkward for us.
The ridiculous thing. I think it's ridiculous though, because the pressure is all put on. We do it to ourselves.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
I wrote my agent the other day and I was asking him a question and he was basically like, relax. It's fine. This will happen when it happens. until it happens, just keep doing what you're doing. It's fine. Like, I'm the only one who feels this mad push to get something done now, you know?
Yeah.
And the awkwardness is also just my personality in general. Adding writing to that personality probably wasn't the best idea. I think writing's made me more neurotic over the years than I ever would have become if I hadn't. But
well, Ron, that's a great place to leave it. And this has been a pleasure. And for my first co-hosting of a podcast, you've made it an absolute joy. So thank you very much for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me. And this was my very first podcast ever. So I hope I didn't ramble. And I hope that what I said made sense, because, you know, I never know what I'm saying once I start talking.
Well, that makes two of us. But I think we got there in the end, and it's been wonderful. And Deep Dive is out now by Angry Robot Books, and you should go and read it. And thank you very much, Ron.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, that was me talking to Ron Walters about his debut novel, Deep Dive, which came out in early January. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to my first attempt at hosting a podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and I can't wait to come back and do this again. Please subscribe to the show if you don't already, and if you fancy leaving a positive review, well, that would just be the very best. Michael Erin of quivernyc.com composed the theme music. I'm Dan Hanks, and I edited this episode. Marshall Poe is the editor and founder of the New Books Network, and Leanne Wilson is the network's co-editor. I don't have a sign-off prepared, so I will simply say thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.